we mentioned in the first week, we live in a beautiful world. It's an amazing place, but it's only half the story. It's pretty hard to avoid the conclusion there is something wrong. And a famous British journalist and playwright, G.K. Chesterton, was once asked to be one of a number of writers in a newspaper in London who were going to answer the question of what's wrong with the world. And Chesterton had a very simple submission. He said, "Dear sirs, I am sincerely yours, G.K. Chesterton." Something very simple about that, but also very true. According to the Christian faith, the biggest problem in the world does have something to do with us. It has to do with something called our sin. That concept of sin is ludicrous or offensive to so many people, and often because we don't understand what followers of Jesus meant by that term. So I'd like to unpack it a little bit with you, try to get beyond the negative baggage you may have brought here with you that I freely admit this word carries. We're going to redefine it using the original definition. First definition that we're going to use comes from the actual word, from the original word for sin that was used in the New Testament portion of the Bible. Because the New Testament part of the Bible was written in Greek. And the word in Greek for sin is hamartion. You may think that that's some kind of an ultra-religious word for things you do wrong. But it's actually a sporting word. It comes from archery. If an archer was firing arrows at their target and they missed, they would say, "Oh, I sinned." Then they do it again. "Oh, I sinned again. I missed the target." You can just imagine them sitting there all day. "Oh, sinned again. Meant to hit the target, but I didn't." This is the original definition for the word sin. It's to set a target for yourself and then to miss it. Now, I do this kind of thing in my own life. I have this kind of double-mindedness that says I'm going to do something and then I don't. I can see it happening all the time with my books, because I love to collect books. I love to find unusual finds in, you know, used bookstores and take them home and put them on my shelf. And the plan is always that I'm going to read them. And I, you know, if I'm on the subway on my way home after a long day, I'll say to myself, okay, when I get home, I'm going to read a book. I'm going to pick up one of those books that I bought, and I'm going to take it downstairs, and I'm going to read it. And then I get home. And, it'd be nice to have some music playing. So, you know, I'll take the book downstairs and sit down on the couch, and the easiest way to listen to music is to turn the TV on. And so I turn the TV on to play some music through the TV, and I wonder if I'm missing something. Better make sure there's nothing, you know, really important on TV. And before I know it, I'm just vegging out on the couch, the book beside me looking pretty, and me not looking so pretty on the couch, not reading. I set these goals for myself. I'm going to read. I'm going to learn. That's the person I want to be, is somebody who's always learning and growing, and then I end up vegetating. Can do it with exercise, too. I have the same kind of goal for myself. Oh, you know, tomorrow's going to be the day I get up at 5 in the morning and I go running. I'm going to be that guy. You know, I see him in my neighborhood when I'm up with my baby in the middle of the night and he runs by, and I'm going to be that guy. I'm going to go running and I'm going to get really healthy and strong, and it's going to be great. Then 5 o'clock rolls around, and you know what? I don't go running. Staying in bed just seems a whole lot more magnetic to me, and I just can't quite break the magnetism of the bed. In some ways, that sounds pretty dysfunctional, right? I have in my mind to do something, and I have a goal that I'm planning to hit, a target, if you will. And then I completely miss the thing, not always by accident, sometimes quite intentionally. In a bigger sense, that kind of dysfunctionality is what the followers of Jesus were calling sin, although the goal wasn't one that we set for ourselves, but rather one that God had set for us, but we consistently miss. When we do that, you can probably imagine it's not always as trivial as the kinds of things I just shared that I'm willing to obviously share up front in front of a group of people I don't know very well yet. But you can imagine that sin can be quite wide and varied. It can be very personal. Imagine if every time I miss the mark in my life, imagine if every time I'm not the person who I desire to be because I know God desires me to be that person, we put up a little yellow post-it note. Imagine every time that happens, a post-it note goes up somewhere on the wall in this room. 1, 2, 3, 4, and they just keep piling up. And eventually the whole room's covered. There's, you know, no paint left, just yellow little notes. And you walk in the room and they kind of flutter, and it's quite pretty, but embarrassing for me. And then, well, we run out of space, so we have to start stacking them on top of each other. Two layers, three layers, four layers, and we just keep making that wall of yellow post-it notes thicker and thicker. Like I said, you might find it kind of cool to walk in here and see them all flutter in the wind, but I'd be naked and humiliated in front of you. You would know every time that I've missed the mark in my life that God has set for me. The Apostle Paul, who wrote most of the New Testament, summed it up this way. He said, "All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God." All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Now notice, first of all, the archery connection, right? All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. You can just see the arrow going through the air, falling short of the target. Didn't quite make it there. But note also what Paul's comparing us to. What he has to say about the target itself. Paul is comparing us to the glory of God. You see, when we talk about sin, we generally like to compare ourselves with other people. It's a lot better that way, right? We'll say, you know, okay, I'm not perfect, but I'm no axe murderer. You know, I saw a movie once and there was this guy, now he was a sinner. But, you know, compared to him, I don't come off too bad. We compare ourselves with all the worst villains in the world and all these sordid stories. Watch Criminal Minds and you'll come out feeling really good about yourself. But what Paul says is that's not the way it works. When we compare ourselves to God himself, every single one of us, from the axe murderer to you, assuming you're not one, we all fall incredibly short too. Well, today we're asking you to consider, how have you thought of sin in the past? When you hear that word, what kind of images or words are conjured up in your mind? This would be a great one to discuss with somebody else that you're following along this course with, or maybe you could invite somebody else to explore it with you. Have a good discussion. We'll see you tomorrow.